Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of eDraft.com's Back 9 Report. We come to you online every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, along with recaps, previews, interviews. Hey, we talk anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. I'm back this week. Kieran, thanks for filling in last week. You're always excellent, Fred. I'm back and a lot to talk about. I don't know if we can do it in 2 hours, man.
Hey, we got a lot going on, Carlos, and we are glad to have you back. It's just not the same when you're not rolling things through. So, hey, we had Hunter Mahan making his presence felt with a win at the Barclays and maybe securing his Ryder Cup spot. Tiger Woods says goodbye and goodnight to Sean Foley, and we have several big names play themselves out of the FedEx Cup already. Carlos, we got a lot to talk about. Let's go.
Let's go. We have a lot to talk about, and we're going to talk about that Ryder Cup a little bit later on because it changes so fast, faster than you can say Hunter Mahan, but we have that for later on. So let's start with the Par 5 news right away. And, Fred, what happened to Barack Obama? Why are people criticizing him?
You know, Carlos, normally I don't like to do this kind of reporting. This is way too serious stuff for me. You know, I like to keep my head stuck and securely in the game of golf, but if a busy person finds some time to slip away from his day-to-day grind and spend a few minutes on the golf course, more power to him. You know, that's great. I know how cathartic beating the hell out of a little white golf ball can be when you're in a high-pressure situation. But even Obama backer Rick Unger from Forbes magazine found it necessary to criticize the president for keeping a tea time with some friends after his televised comments on the John Foley assassination by the ISIS gang. The country was fascinated with President Eisenhower's passion for golf, and he, along with Arnold Palmer, kicked off the golf craze of the 50s and the 60s. JFK was photographed playing golf in Shangri-La, and the country laughed out loud at the antics of President Gerry Ford on the golf course. So there is a history of presidents playing golf. Going to the course immediately following such serious and compelling news about the death of one of its citizens abroad seems to be a bit callous on the president's part. I am all for our presidents and corporate CEOs spending some time on the golf course, but it does seem that President Obama's timing could have been a little bit better. Carlos, kind of a bad situation there, maybe.
Yeah, maybe he's I don't know. They should have told him more about this. I mean, he's always been so right in everything he does, but this time I think he's – colleagues or anything, they just didn't do the right thing there. But well, that's what happens. Anyway, hey, let me tell you about Bubba Watson. Oh my, he should come for it. He should come with instructions that you find in the bottle of shampoo. You know, this one should say lather, rinse, repeat. You know, because that's what he is. I mean, he's the reigning master champions, but he has this penchant for working people up to the brightest powder, washing away the insults with an apology, and then agitating Bubba watchers with yet another ill-advised word or action. We've seen it. We've seen this with his boorish comments in Paris and the French fans during the French Open in 2011, throwing his caddy under the golf cart more than once for his own on-course errors, and more recently at the British Open. But hey, baby Bubba was in full frost during the week at Valhalla, running through the entire cycle in the few short days of his stay at the PGA Championship, but offering a slight variation of the team now. After the golf world took him to task for his head-scratching protest of a harmless pre-tourney exhibition, the Double Masters winner was scourged for his petulant boo-hooing about how the world was conspiring against him by making him actually blame the rain for a share of the $10 million PGA purse. He treated his caddy, Ted Scott, like a broken tee, especially during a boorish second round when he dropped an obscenity after a poor shot. complained about the water on his club face and actually made Scott tee up a ball for him so he wouldn't get in the rain. But Watson, as I have said before, he was doubly sorry for acting like a brat. At Valhalla, he headed to Twitter twice during the PGA Championship to apologize for being a boor and to thank critics for pointing out that he's a boor. David Kindred of Golf Digest was especially scathing and brilliant in taking Watson to task for the hypocrisy between his professed faith and the expletive, deleted way he comported himself on the course that Friday. You know, he dropped the F-bomb, threw a club, and generally made an ass of himself. But what followed was unusual, tweeted mea culpa with Bubba promising yet again to change his ways. And I'm going to read his tweet there. He said, "Sorry for my actions today. Trying to get better as a person. Thanks to all who support me. Hashtag y'all don't give up on me." A day later, Watson offered a variation of his hashtag you're welcome theme when he thanked his Twitter and media critics, claim he willfully ignored during the Open Championship for showing him the errors his ways. And he said, and I quote, "Thanks to everyone for holding me accountable for my actions. It's helping me to get better. Hashtag thanks. Hashtag blessed." You're welcome? I don't know. He keeps trying to apologize and going, "Hey, man, blah, blah, blah. Forget about it. Just grow up. Play the game of golf like you can do it. I mean, you're one of the most creative players in the world right now. And when you're on, you're great. So just stick to playing golf, please."
Carlos, this is our number one player on our Ryder Cup team.
He is? No way. It can't be.
Do you think we have a problem?
Oh, my God. That's what we're
hey, moving on, in the news. One of the most revered names in golf, Arnold Palmer, will turn 85 in September. He has had health problems before and came through with flying colors. The King has battled prostate issues and became a spokesman for that malady. He also was forced to enter the hospital 2 years ago and missed the final round of his Arnold Palmer Invitational when he had an adverse reaction to some new medication and was overextending himself as the host of the tournament. His latest bout with health issues came last Monday when he had a pacemaker inserted into his heart to cure an abnormal heartbeat. The surgery was performed at the UPMC Presbyterian Hospital, and he was released from the hospital after observation overnight. The seven-time major champion remains one of the most endearing figures in golf and annually ranks among the top endorsement earners among professional athletes. And we wish Arnie a safe and speedy recovery and know he'll be back out there on the golf course beating him around as soon as he can.
Rapid recovery to King, so hopefully he'll be back soon. So get well, Arnie. Hey, Fred. Let's talk a little bit about the LPGA and some boost that it got this recently this past week. And let's talk about two things. One is that the Kings Barnes Golf Links will host its first major championship as the venue was awarded to the 2017 Women's British Open on Friday. The 5-feet course opened 14 years ago and was ranked number one in Golf Week's top 100 modern courses in the UK and ranked teens on Golf Digest's top 100 best courses outside the U.S. It has been part of the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship since 2001 and has hosted final qualifying for the 2010 Open Championship and last year's Women's British Open. Art Dunkley, who is the director of Kings Barnes Golf Link, he said that the people have said many flattering things about their course and facilities since they opened 14 years ago, but that being selected to host the first major championship, their first major championship, is the greatest accolade of them all for them. So also Shona McComb, the CEO of the Ladies Golf Union, which is the overseeing company of the championship, added to that saying that she believes that Kings Barnes will be a wonderful addition to the Women's Open Rota, and their excitement right now at hosting their first major will make that addition very special, and they are looking forward to a long relationship with them. As you all know, Mo Martin made an eagle in the final hole this year to win the Women's British Open. She will defend it next year at Tenbury, while in 2016 will be staged at Woburn before going to Kingsbarn a year after. And the other news, more good news for the LPGA, and that is because the Asian multinational corporation Lottie has extended its title sponsorship of the annual LPGA event in Hawaii. The new deal runs for 3 years, and while the financial terms were not disclosed, this will enable the event to increase its overall prize purse to $1.8 million next year, an increase of $100,000 on this year's edition that American Michelle Wee won. So the LPGA Lottie Championship, which is held in Kapolei in Hawaii's Oahu Island, is the LPGA's tour only stop on that remote American state. So, you know, Lottie's other investment in golf includes title sponsor of two Korean events, the Lottie Mart Women's Open and the Lottie Cantata Women's Open. The company also has an individual agreement with Hi-Yu Kim, who currently plies her trade on the Korea's KLPGA Tour.
Yeah, you know, talking about Kings Barnes, a lot of people are saying that Kings Barnes is the best links golf course ahead of even St. Andrews, nearby St. Andrews. So, and you know, also, Carlos, when they visit Woburn here in a couple years, you know who's a full member at Woburn?
No, who is it?
Charlie Hall.
Yeah. Oh,
gonna
Charlie
have,
Hall.
She's going to have a little bit of a – she grew up on that golf course. She's going to have a little bit of a home field advantage there on the girls.
Oh, so we're going to have to be looking forward to that.
Hey, Carlos, we have quite a bit of news in the ladies' game this week. Continuing with on that, Lydia Ko has been battling a wrist injury, and her coach, David Ledbetter, said that Ko has been advised to have surgery and will miss several months of action to recuperate. It appears that she will undergo the knife after the final major of the women's season at the Evian Masters, where she finished runner-up to Suzanne Pedersen last year. So, just too bad. I mean, she leads the in the Rookie of the Year race. She's probably pretty much got that locked up. You know, she's won this year, just, you know, top 10 after top 10. And, you know, you've kind of noticed the last couple weeks she's not played that well. You know, the wrist must really be bothering her. So, unfortunate that's going to have to happen for her. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of injuries in the world of golf this year. On the ladies' European Tour, Carlos, the ladies' Scottish Open announced some big news this week. It will be held the week preceding the Women's British Open, and the purse will be doubled beginning next year. And that's coming up right now, the Lady Scottish. So the purse is going to be doubled next year from £200,000 sterling to £400,000 sterling. Aberdeen Asset Management, the same company that sponsors the Scottish Open on the Men's European Tour, has signed a new three-year agreement with the Ladies European Tour to hold the tournament and make it the third largest purse on the Ladies European Tour, behind only the Women's British Open and the Evian Masters. So really good news there for the Ladies European Tour. Aberdeen Asset Management has jumped into golf in a big way in Scotland and has become a real big supporter there.
Great news all over. The only bad thing there about Lydia Ko, but all the rest are superb news for the ladies game all over, the LPGA and the Ladies European Tour. Hey, Fred, one more piece of news, if you can call it. You know, it's been a big week for the world's best golfers. They have been pouring cold water over their heads. While the ALS Bucket Challenge first kicked off in golf circles early in the summer, it didn't really take off until a few weeks ago when Pete Freights, a former Boston College baseball player with ALS, spread it far and wide. Now it's come back around to hit some of these famous golfers again, most notably Ricky Fowler, who dumped the ice water in his head at the end of June. But, you know, Fowler's second round with the challenge will probably get a lot more play. However, as he led a majority of the U.S. Ryder Cup team in response to the call-out from Captain Tom Watson, lined up from left to right with Fowler, where it's Jim Furyk, Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, Zach Johnson, Bubba Watson, this is the second time for him. What a surprise. And Jimmy Walker. So who was left? Well, missing were Phil Mickelson, Matt Kuchar, and the three captains pick. They have to be announced in September, too. So from the European side that Pollard just called out, you know, they won't have their official out of qualifiers until the end of August. So Captain Watson started the week, which also included Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy accepting that challenge when he had a loader douse him. So I took the challenge also this weekend, and I was going to call you out for it, so I didn't do it on the video, so I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to call you out for the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge here in public, so do it, Fred. You are being called out. You know, everybody in golf is doing it. You have to do it, Fred.
Carlos, my idea of the Ice Bucket Challenge is to have a bottle of chilled wine sitting in the ice bucket on the table while I write the check to the charity. I consider anything else ice abuse. So I wouldn't look for that on Facebook anytime soon, Carlos.
Okay. As long as you write the check, you can use it.
I've already paid. We, as you know, was on the trip to West Virginia last week, and the lady who organized the trip accepted the challenge, and at our last stop on Friday, we had a rain delay, and so during the rain delay, she collected donations from everyone that was on the trip and doubled and matched that amount herself, and there were seven people that doused her with buckets of ice. I just didn't watch. It's okay.
You were with your cup of ice, you know, with your drink, and that's
I did. Yep.
You down.
It was great theater, great
throat.
Show. Yep.
Hey, that's our Power 5 news. But hey, we have some birthdays this week. And yesterday, Katrina Matthews, 2009 Women's British Open champ, she turned 45. She was born in Edinburgh, Scotland. Tomorrow, somebody that knows something about playing and is playing somehow average right now in the Champions Tour, and that's Bernhard Langer. He will turn 57. He was born in Ironhausen, Germany. He's a two-time Masters, and he's obliterating everybody in the Champions Tour. And on the 31st, the last day of this week, on Sunday, it will be two people. The two are major winners. One is a two-time major winner, and that is Patty Harrington. He's going to turn 43, and Charles Schwalzer, the Masters champ, he's going to turn 30. So that's our birthdays for this week. So happy birthday to all of them, and that wraps up.
Charles Schwalzer is only 30?
Yep, he's going to turn 30.
Wow.
On
wow.
31st.
He's got another good 5, 6, 7, 8 years yet. Good for him.
Yeah, he's still young, man. We are the young oldies here.
Yeah, you got that right. And I'm a lot older than you.
Hey, that wraps up our first part, our Power 5 news on the birthdays of this week. So don't go away, anybody. We'll be right back. We have some recaps to talk to you about. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time to start our previews from this, our recaps from this past weekend's action. I just want to go to the previews this today, and that's why I'm Anyway, let's talk about the Barclays. The FedEx Cup started, and hey, Hunter Mahan. Raise your hands, everybody who knew that Hunter Mahan was going to win. Okay, none. Okay. He recorded 5 birdies during his back nine on Sunday as he came from behind to win the Barclays by 2 strokes. He carded a 6-under 65 in the final round there at Richwood Country Club to end at 14-under par to 70. He collected his 6th career victory on the PGA Tour and the first since the 2012 Houston Open. Jason Day, who held a share of the third-round lead with Jim Furyk, shot a 3-under-68 to end in a tie for second place with Stuart Appleby and Cameron Tringali, yeah, the one that disqualified himself from the PGA. At 12-under, Ernie Els, William McGirt, and Matt Kuchar shared fifth at 11-under, while Furyk managed only a 1-under-70 to end alone in eighth at 10-under. Ricky Fowler, Patrick Reed, Kevin Nunn, Morgan Hoffman tied for ninth at 9-under. So Mahan collected $1.4 million for that win and also moved to the top of the FedEx Cup points list. Furyk earned his 13th top 10 finish in the FedEx Cup playoffs, which tied him with Steve Stricker for the most all time. So, hey, Fred, how about that win by Hunter Mahan? What a surprise, and he puts himself on top of the FedEx Cup right now.
Yeah, really big for him. You know, we've been talking about all the possibilities for the Ryder Cup coming up, and he pretty much locked himself up a spot, I think. He wins, plays himself onto the Ryder Cup team, takes over number one spot in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Pretty big week. To me, there was three big storylines in this tournament. That was number one. Number two is who missed the cut for the Deutsche Bank outside the top 100. And number three, who played himself into the Deutsche Bank. Hunter Mahan's birdie blitz won the tournament, five birdies on the back nine to jump to the lead and end up winning by two shots. Just a great round. The question is Mahan a sure pick for Tom Watson now? Interesting fact, Carlos. I was going to make this, I thought about making this a question of the week, but we'll just leave it to interesting fact. Hunter Mahan is the only player to play in every FedEx Cup playoff event held since they began the series in 2007. So that shows tremendous consistency. Jason Day had a great week, shot 68 on Sunday, but fell just two shots short and tied for runner-up with Stuart Appleby and Cameron Tringali. Appleby, you'll remember, his last win came in 2010 at the Greenbrier Classic, where he shot a 59 in the final round to get that win. Tringali, nice rebound after his PGA Championship mishap. He ended up DQing himself last week after an indecision about a putting stroke that he may or may or not make. Ernie Els had a good week, posted minus 11 early, finished T5 after a final round 66. He was tied with William McGirt and Matt Kuchar. Furyk had another bad final round, shoots 70, falls seven places to eighth. If you can call 70 a bad round, it's all relative, I guess. You got to go low when you're on the PGA Tour. Patrick Reed, Ricky Fowler, Kevin Na, and Morgan Hoffman finished at 9-under and tied for ninth, so good week for them. Where in the world was Rory McIlroy? Well, he was clear down at T22, shot a nice little 65 in the second round, but a 74 in the first round just kind of did him in. Phil, you remember Phil Mickelson, big guy, left-hander. He missed the 54-hole cut. Still only had one top 10 finish this year, and he's another guy that's on our Ryder Cup team. This boat is sinking fast. Jeff Ogilvy is the last man in this week. He is number 100 on the FedEx Cup rankings. Notable names out of the FedEx Cup after the Barclays: Jonas Blixt, Nick Watney, who's been playing well of late. Lee Westwood, you remember him, Carlos, number one player, I believe, a few years ago.
He was?
You know, you remember him, but, pretty good player from England. Louis Oosthuizen, okay. I think he won a British Open one time at St. Yeah. Andrews. Robert Allenby just won in Reno. He's out. And guys that are in trouble this week that are in, they're going to cut down to 70 after this week. So those guys that are from 70 to 100 got to play well. They got to move up. You remember a guy by the name of Ian Poulter with the Bug Eyes from the Ryder Cup? He was 78 last week, fell to 91 this week. So he's gonna have to do a little bit better. He's going to be gone. Vijay Singh is in trouble. Paul Casey, number 85, withdrew for the birth of his child, so he's going to be done for the year. Luke Donald was 66, fell clear to 80, so he's in jeopardy. Also, he's fighting for a spot on the European team Ryder Cup. Snedeker, You remember him, Brant Snedeker. We're going to talk about him a little bit. He was a 55th, fell clear to 71. He's also playing himself right out of the Ryder Cup. Henrik Stenson, number 66, moved up four spots. So, you know, more guys seem to be falling down than we're moving up. I don't know how that happens, but it's kind of a zero-sum game. If somebody goes down, somebody's got to go up. But a lot of big names going to be sitting at home for the next couple weeks, Carlos.
That's so sad, man. I'm about to cry. Especially because of the U.S. team, not because of anything.
Yeah, exactly.
No. But hey, for Hunter Mahan, it really definitely is a timely win for him. You know, that Captain Tom Watson, he will be announcing that those three players that he will add to his squad for the biennial event at Glen Eagles later on. But as with most captains, you would assume that he's looking for who's playing best in the weeks leading up to selecting his pick. So Hunter Mahan, like you mentioned, may have been already among the group that Watson was watching. So he definitely caught the captain's eye on Sunday. He rallied to win the Barclays. So that victory is significant because of one thing very special. And if Mahan is selected by Watson, which I'm sure he will, that win would mark the first by a U.S. team member since April. Five of those nine players that already qualified for the U.S. team have won this year, but none of those wins were in the last 4 months. So those wins were in order. It was Zach Johnson, the Tournament of Champions, Jimmy Walker, Pebble Beach, Ryan, Patrick Johnson, Patrick Reed, with WGC Cadillac, and Bubba Watson, the Masters, and Matt Kuchar, the Heritage. Wow, that seems like a year ago. And Walker had won two times earlier in the season, which started, when was it? Last year, right? October 2013. So the other four members are on a year-long or years-long win list route. So Jordan Spieth and Phil Mickelson won in consecutive weeks last year, but that was ages ago. So, Fred, that's how bad the team is looking right now. I mean, no momentum, only other than Hunter Mahan right now. So definitely, if Captain Tom Watson doesn't pick him, I don't know who he's going to pick.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, this win for him, really big ramifications. He made about, 10 miles of putts, So Watson has said he wants someone who can putt a little bit. And, Mahan definitely proved that this weekend. Plus, his game fits well with just about anybody. You know, he's really consistent. He hits it in the fairway, especially like in foursomes. He'd be a great foursome partner. Doesn't hit a lot of foul balls and put your partner in a bad place. So I think he's pretty much a lock now. And we already have Keegan Bradley as a lock. So that only leaves one place, Carlos, and so if we're looking at Bubble Boys here, we're looking at Brant Snedeker, Webb Simpson, and Ryan Moore. Moore and Simpson both missed the cut last week. Moore's had a wonderful season with one win and seven top tens, but he missed the cut this week, and he just needs a really big week if he wants to get in this discussion. So, I know that Watson wants to pit Snedeker in the worst way. You know, and Snedeker's been in this position before. He went out and won, he finished real high. Or didn't win, I guess. He finished real high in two of the events at the start of the FedEx Cup playoffs to play himself into the Ryder Cup a couple times ago. So he knows what it's all about. He knows how to do it. But, man, these guys, they just are not playing out well right now, as well as really no one on the U.S. Ryder Cup team is playing all that exciting. I mean, even Jordan Spieth, he had a nice tournament. But, boy, I tell you what, I've never been – this down on a U.S. Ryder Cup team heading into, a Ryder Cup just 3 weeks away, or, well, I guess a little bit longer now, but, a month away, let's say, from the Ryder Cup. It's unbelievable, Carlos.
No, definitely. I it's like you. I really don't want it to happen. I think they should just give him the trophy, say, let's just practice. Let's just do some practice at the ranch there at Glenn's or something like that. But going to your comment about Snedeker, yeah, 2 years ago he won the tour, the FedEx Cup, and he won the tour championship. But he started well at the Barclays there. He finished second. So he's going in a definitely other direction. So I don't know. I like the pick if it would be Ryan Moore. He's had a great year, and maybe better than the other two, Webb Simpson and Brent. I mean, Brent is starting to play back again into it, but it doesn't seem he's too inconsistent right now, and I would give the nod to Ryan. I mean, what the heck? Whatever we have already, it can't be worse. I mean, somebody new might they bring that ignorance and play well, just like a Patrick Reed or some of the new guys. Or who knows? Maybe they'll pick up on the Solheim Cup team Europe and say, hey, we have nothing to lose, and they'll surprise everybody. You know, whatever it can, anything can happen, and there's no. There's only death and taxes that are for sure in life. So anyway, let's move on now to more recaps. We'll get back to it. I know we have a lot to talk about, so let's just go now to the web.com tour, Fred. I did it. Yes, yes, it happened. Carlos Ortiz. Thank you, Carlos. Thank you. And I'm not thanking myself. I'm not thanking myself. He did it. He waited.
You've been picking him all year. You've been riding him all year, man.
But he finally, it wasn't the best round. He played all week, let me tell you. But he, Carlos Ortiz, he did enough on Sunday to win the Portland Open. He closed with an even par 71 to finish at 1,400 to 70. That victory was the third of the season on the Web.com Tour and earned him an automatic promotion to the PGA Tour. So he's fully exempt for next year. If he would have done it earlier, like you talked to me, we were talking before the show, maybe he could have been in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Not likely, but at least he would have played already on the PGA Tour. Jason Gore, who's the Tour's all-time wins leader, he rallied with a 566 to grab a share of second place. He was joined there at 13-under by Adam Hadwin, who had a 1-under 70 in the final round there at the Witch Hollow course at Pumpkin Ridge Golf Club. Hope knows. Fourth place at 11-under, Steven Alker, James Nittles, Scott Pinkey, Blaine Barber shared fifth at minus 10. So, hey, this was the last tournament of the regular season on the Web.com Tour. So the top 25 on the money list earned their PGA Tour cards for next season, while the top 75 on the money list gained a spot on the Web.com Tour Finals, which will begin next week. Kyle Reifers, he struggled to a 3-over 74 on Sunday, but a birdie on the 17th and a par at the last helped him to move from number 27 to number 25 on the money list. So he will return to the PGA Tour next year thanks to that closing par putt. So James Needes and Wee Kim were the only two to move into the top 75 on the money list. They bumped Zach Fisher and Roberto Diaz, boom, out of the top 75, Fred.
Yeah, you know, you've been riding Carlos Ortiz all year, man, and you picked him. You know, when he got the wins, early South America and early in the year, and he's played well. We saw him play down here at the in the Memorial. Jack gave him a special invitation to come and play. So he's had a great year. He made the cut. He wasn't feeling good in Columbus. Really worked hard on Friday to make the cut on the number and play the weekend. So, you know, he's had a great year, and he deserves it. He wins about $515,000 so far this year, and I guess he's going to play in the tour final event, so he could win some more yet. Andrew Putnam, Michael Putnam's brother, who Michael finished first last year on the Web.com Tour, and is playing on the PGA Tour this year, ends up finishing second with about $320,000 in total earnings. As you mentioned, Adam Hadwin, the Canadian, ends up having a good year, gets his card. So you're going to have another Canadian on the tour there. Alex Cheka is back on the PGA Tour. Blaine Barber, the guy that has all the trouble signing and filling out scorecards, he finished number seven. Jason Gore, a real popular golfer, been up and down off the PGA Tour, back down to web.com. He earned his card again. So as you mentioned, Kyle Reifers played his way in. He started at number 27, bounced up to number 25. So somebody bounces up, somebody's got to bounce out, and that was the mystery man, Sebastian Capelan. Mm-hmm. He went from 25th to 26th. Ouch. Misses it by one spot. Kieran's favorite golfer.
Mystery man.
You also mentioned that James Nitti's of Big Break fame played his way into the tour finals, moving from 97 up to 70, and Wee Kim was the other one that moved up from 77 to 72. So they're in the top 75, so they will play in these four events here at the end of the year. As you mentioned, Zach Fisher and Roberto Diaz bounced out. Andres Echeverra started the week number 76, and he finished the week number 76, so he's the guy that missed by one place. He ended up tied for 43rd at minus two. And Carlos, the web.com tour finals, we're going to talk about them in a minute. They do start this week in Fort Wayne with the Hotel Fitness Championship. I'm going to try and go down there tomorrow for a while, maybe get a couple interviews that we can play next week. So, the format is that the top 75 from the web.com tour and numbers 125 through 200 from the PGA Tour will play these next four events on the web.com tour for 25 more 2015 PGA Tour cards. So a lot to play for over the next 4 weeks in the web.com tour finals.
Yeah, and this is going to be four turns, so a lot to play for, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit. So let's now go to the quick recaps from the rest of the tournaments. And there was action in the European Tour. Jamie Donaldson, he finished his week off 4-under 68 on Sunday to win the Czech Masters by 2 shots and securing his spot on the European Ryder Cup team. He came into the week holding the next-to-last spot on the world's points list, ended 14-under for his third career victory. Third-round leader Bradley Dredge, also from Wales, could not quite go low enough in that final day, finishing in sole possession of second place. So Donaldson needed a top-seven finish in order to secure that spot in the Ryder Cup team. He did it better. He won. Great win by him. So he's on Paul McGinsley. He's now a member of Paul McGinsley's team at the Ryder Cup. There was action on the LPGA, and Soo Young Ryu, she carded a 3-under 69 on Sunday as she rolled to a 2-stroke victory at the Canadian Pacific Women's Open. Yeah, Lydia Ko, she didn't win. So it was Soo Young Ryu. She finished her wire-to-wire 23-under par, 265. That 265 tied the lowest score in tournament history, while her score of 23-under bested the tournament's lowest number in relation to par by 5 strokes. It's her third win on the LPGA Tour. NYC, Nayeon Choi, great to see her back playing well again. She finished in second place. Inbay Park took third there at the LPGA's Canadian Pacific Women's Open at London Hunt and Country Club in London, Ontario, Canada. There was also action on Champions Tour, and no, Bernhard Langer, he didn't win. It was Cottle Dunlap. He birdied the first playoff hole on Sunday to beat Mark Brooks and win the Boyne Classic. And he got in first at 16-under to par 200 thanks to 6 birdies in his last 7 holes. That gave Brooks a 7-under 65. Dunlap par his last 4 holes to plus a 4-under for the extra session, but there was where Dunlap won it with his birdie putt. Gene Sowers played the last 12 holes in 2-under par to finish alone in third place with Dunlap earning $300,000 for the win there in the Champions Tour. In the European Senior Tour, the counterpart for the Champions Tour was Cesar Monasterio from Argentina. He closed with a final round 270, scoring a five-stroke victory there at the English Senior Open. It was the first win for him. He joined the European Senior Tour earlier in the year, so he picked up his first career victory on tour. He also picked up a win on the European Tour in 2006 and the Challenge Tour in 2005. Andrew Alcorn finished second there, and Barry Lane as well tied five shots behind him. And finally, on the Challenge Tour, we have been talking about this guy from South Korea, Bae Young Han. He fired an 8-under-64 on Saturday, finally won his first win there at the Challenge Tour. He has been threatening all year long, and he's a serious talent. He won the Rolex Trophy, collected his first career win, 19-under-par. Benjamin Abird was second, three shots behind. So the first win for Bae Young Han. Remember that name from South Korea, Bae Young Han. So, Fred, any quick thoughts on any of those tournaments that were played this weekend?
Yeah, starting with the European Tour, Jamie Donaldson wanted to be on the Ryder Cup team, been hanging around the bubble there all year, had a great year, great win for him there in Czechoslovakia. Third career win, he moves up to number 27 in the official world golf rankings and number 4 in the Race to Dubai. He's had 5 top 10s this year and is up to 1.7 million euro in total earnings. You know, last year he finished 5th in the Race to Dubai with 2.18 mil, and he had 7 top 10s last year. So he's on the same kind of track this year that he had last year and just been playing very well. You know, we talked about the U.S. Ryder Cup team. We should give equal time here to the European team a little bit, Carlos. This is going to be the last week for them. They're going to announce their they're going to lock in their 9 autos this week. And you've got Rory, Henrik Stenson, Victor Dubuisson, Jamie Donaldson, Sergio, Justin Rose, Martin Keimer, Thomas Bjarne, and G-Mac. Looks like they're going to get the 9 spots. Now, you've got 3 picks, Carlos, and you got 5 guys. So tell me who you're going to pick. And remember, Kieran's probably going to listen to this sometime and going to chew us out if we get this wrong. So you got Ian Poulter. You got Lee Westwood, the guy we haven't seen much of lately, Luke Donald, Stephen Gallagher, and Hoist Leuten. Who are you going to pick? Who are you going to call?
You mentioned somebody called Lee Westwood. Was that one of the persons
that you
mentioned?
I did mention him. I did. You remember him?
I'm trying to, but no, I can't. Don't recall. But I'm going to say Stephen Gallagher has to be there. And I'm going to say Ian Poulter has to be there. And that name Westwood sounds familiar to me, but I don't know. I'm just going to say that because it sounds good. Lee Westwood is the name. I'm going to say Gallagher, Poulter, and that guy Westwood that you mentioned.
You know, the more I look at this, I originally thought, Poulter is a lock. I'm pretty sure. I mean, we've been saying that. I got to stick with that. I just don't think I would pick Westwood if it were me. Today, I would not pick him. I don't know if I'd pick Luke Donald today. He's just not been playing that well, but he partners well in Ryder Cup. So, and he has experience. But I'll tell you who I do like, and I think this guy's going to be on the team, is Stephen Gallagher. I know Kieran disagrees with us on this, but I think Gallagher is going to be on this team. He's number 9 in the Race to Dubai. He's had a great year. I think this is his shot. I think McGinley puts him on. So the last pick's got to go to Westwood, Luke Donald, or Leuten. Honestly, it probably doesn't matter because the European team is so strong. It doesn't matter who they run out there. They're going to kill the U.S. team probably. But again, it's an interesting discussion. Kind of like the U.S. team right now. Who's going to get that last spot? Probably 11 of the 12 spots are locked up, but there's one spot remaining with 2 or 3 guys that have a shot at it. So I guess that's all I'm going to say about the European Tour. The LPGA Tour, So Young Ru finds the winner's circle again. Her last win came Where, Carlos? At the Marathon Classic in 2012. You remember that little thing called the, used to be called Jamie Farr,
Jamie
in the
Farr.
Center of the golf universe right here in Toledo, Ohio. She also won a U.S. Open back in 2011 before she was even an LPGA Tour member. Na Young Choi and Inbee Park finish 2 and 3 behind Rue, giving the Koreans 1, 2, and 3, a clean sweep. That's the first time they've done that for a while. You know, and the Koreans have been dominating the LPGA Tour for several years, but not this year. Park was the only one that really had won this year. So the Koreans maybe are getting together and saying, okay, girls, we're tired of taking second fiddle here. We're tired of these pesky Americans winning everything. Michelle Wee, who's she? Lydia Ko, forget her. Lexi Thompson, don't like her. Stacey Lewis, she's going down. So the Koreans are reinserting their authority. Speaking of Stacey Lewis, she finished outside the top 10 again, minus 7, T23. Is she wearing down, Carlos? She's had 3 wins this year, 14 top 10s and 20 starts, but she's been outside the top 10 in 4 of her last 5 starts. Something's going on there. I don't know if she's got an injury. Something's happening. I told you I saw her up in Grand Rapids. She just didn't look right to me. Didn't look like her heart was in it. I'm not sure what's happening. The grind of being number one may be just wearing her down a little bit. I'm not sure. Another really good finish for Spain's Azahar Munoz. She started the day tied second. Suzanne Pedersen finished tied with Christy Kerr, Brittany Lindstrom, and Anna Norquist for T7. The two biggest stories of the week for me at the LPGA Tour was Ko shoots 76 on Sunday, falls to T55, and has to have the wrist surgery. She's number 3 in the Rolex rankings and leads the Rookie of the Year by a wide margin. The other story, Carlos, is Chela Choi, the victim of a call-in couch-sitting, couch-potato rules official. When are they going to stop this insane madness? It makes me crazy. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Why does some idiot sitting at home on his couch think he has any idea that a rules infraction is happening? Camber angles, integrity of the player, local rules officials, you know, all this stuff plays in. She withdrew rather than accept a penalty that was contrived from a caller about how she replaced her ball on the green. Which side of the coin did she replace her ball? Give me a break, Carlos. Who can see that sitting on their couch a couple thousand miles away? This is just over the top. It's stupid. It's got to stop. I can't stand it. We had a Champions Tour event up in Seattle. Like Seattle. Got a daughter that lives there, going there in October. Hey, stop the presses. Someone other than Bernhard Langer won a Champions Tour event. Scott Dunlap. You remember him. Scott Dunlap. Big name. Big splag. Big splash. You remember him, right, Carlos? Got his first victory on the senior circuit at the Boeing Classic when he won the first playoff haul over Mark Brooks. Brooks had birdied 6 of his last 7 holes to shoot minus 765 and tied with Dunlop at minus 16 for the 54-hole event. Brooks couldn't maintain the momentum, however, and made bogey on the first playoff hole to give the win to Dunlop. Dunlop had 13 top 10s in 205 events on the PGA Tour in his career and had earnings of $2.9 million. He played in 283 events on the Web.com Tour, had 2 wins, and earned another $945,000. Already in 16 starts on Champions Tour, he's got 4 top 10s and earned $700,000. Looks like he's kind of enjoying being over 50 years old, Carlos. So good for him. And let's see, anything else I want to talk about before I let you back in here? No, I guess I'll shut up and we can go to break.
No, we're not going to go to a break yet. We have to correct something. And let's correct it right now. Hey, you mentioned that Kieran Clark was going to be against Stephen Gallagher. No, he's not. He's always been a proponent for him. He even wrote about it today on eDraft.com, so you can go see that on eDraft.com on golf. Great, great article. He's proponing Stephen Gallagher. He should be on the Ryder Cup, and that's what he said. And he sent us a tweet saying that what he said before was that he felt that McGinley would pick Donald Westwood and Poulter, but he's all in. He's all in for Gallagher. So, Kieran, there you have it. I got it for you in. So he is all for Gallagher. So we all three agreeing. I can I can't
that
believe
can't happen.
It,
that can't happen, Carlos.
No. We are all for
you. You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
Yeah, we're serious. We're serious. Hey, now, let's take a short break then. And when we come back, we're going to talk now about some split that happened yesterday. I mean, somebody's phone was ringing a lot yesterday, so let's just go take a short break, and when we come back, we'll tell you all about it.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time to go to the practice range, and we're going to take a theme, and we're going to practice with him. We're going to take our shots at it. And, hey, let me tell you something, friend. I mean, yesterday, Monday, Butch Harmon, he probably, you know, he was sleeping, and he probably woke up thinking that was just going to be a leisure Monday for him. But he probably got about 500 phone calls, 1,000 emails. And you know why that was? The reason for that was because Tiger Woods announced yesterday on his website that he will no longer be working with Sean Foley. And he'll say, and I quote, "I'd like to thank Sean for his help as my coach and for his friendship. Sean is one of the outstanding coaches in golf today, and I know he will continue to be successful with the players working with him. With my next tournament, not until my World Challenge event at Isleworth in Orlando, this is the right time to end our professional relationship. Woods and Foley have worked together since August 2010, and Foley said, my time spent with Tiger is one of the highlights of my career so far, and I am appreciative of the many experiences we shared together. It was a lifelong ambition of mine to teach the best player of all time in our sport. I am both grateful for the things we had the opportunity to learn from each other, as well as the enduring friendship we have built. I have nothing but respect and admiration for him." Woods, as you all remember, he went on to say that he doesn't have a coach and there is no timetable for him to hire one. He's out of action right now, so he's resting his back after a bout of back spasms which followed surgery on his back earlier in the year. He's a 14-time major champ. He's had 3 swing coaches as a professional. He began his career working with Butch Harmon before moving on to Hank Haney. He was with Harmon from his amateur days until 2004, and with Haney from 2003 to 2010. Woods won 8 of his major championships while working with Harmon and 6 with Haney as his swing coach, none with Foley. So after the 2009 scandal that led to Woods' divorce, he began working with Foley the following year. He went winless for over 2 full seasons. From 2010 into early 2012, he finally got it back into the winner's circle in 2012 at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So since working with Foley, which has posted just 5 top 10 finishes in majors and has missed 4 majors due to injury, he missed the cut in 2 majors while both with Haney and Foley. He has won 7 more times since 2012, but all of those wins were in 2012 and 13. As he battled a bad back earlier this year, he has struggled in competition. He's now 38 years old, and father time, is falling on him, Fred. So how about this news about his split with Sean Foley?
Yeah, that was kind of rumored starting back at the WGC Bridgestone. When Tiger withdrew, he hurt his back when he torqued it, hitting from that odd angle in that bunker on number 2 on Sunday at Firestone, and then tried to continue to play out the rest of the front 9. And Harmon had come to him on the range after that, and not in a scolding way, but kind of said, you know, he should have withdrawn sooner and not risk injuring himself farther coming off surgery like he had been. And it was also rumored that Mark Steinberg and his top henchmen had been quietly approaching Butch about a reconciliation with Tiger, because as you remember, when they split in 2003, it was not really a pretty sight. It was not a happy an amicable divorce, let's say it that way. You know, Butch is pretty opinionated and a pretty serious kind of guy, and Tiger is he's fairly serious himself. So he thinks quite a bit of himself also. So there's two huge egos there. You know, Woods has gone through three swing coaches, as you mentioned. Harmon, he won 8 majors under Butch. He played the best golf that maybe anybody has ever played in 2000 and 2001. With Hank Haney, he again won 6 majors, got to playing really well until injury, and then his personal problems came to the fore in 2009, and then he's been with Foley for the last 4 years. He did announce via his website that he would part ways. And, you know, Woods was tutored by Butch Harmon even before he turned professional. He won, and you know, Earl had sought out the advice and the help of Butch Harmon, and Harmon was kind enough to take Woods on. As I mentioned, Harmon's demanding and very opinionated, but he does draw out the best from his students and builds up their confidence. His latest work with Ricky Fowler proves that even at the age of 70, he still knows how to create winning golfers. You know, Foley was in pretty much almost a no-win position. How do you take one of the 3 or 4 best golfers that have ever held a golf club and make them better? You know, Foley joined Woods' team in 2010 after his messy divorce and helped guide Woods through his return. He was hampered by Tiger's numerous injuries, and the partnership resulted in 0 championship victories. So that doesn't work when Tiger's trying to surpass Jack. There was the 5-win season last year when the prospect of Woods donning green jackets and drinking from claret jugs in 2014 seemed to be imminent. The back surgery at the end of March and the lengthy layoff again cost Woods a year of no major trophies. As you mentioned, he will turn 39 years old in December with creaky knees and a surgically repaired back. Time is growing short to reach his career goal of surpassing Jack Nicklaus and winning 19 major championships. Plus, the new kid on the block, Rory McIlroy, is winning majors in bunches, just like the 24-year-old Tiger Woods used to do. The parting of Butch Harmon and Woods in 2003 was difficult. Both men have huge egos and strong opinions. What a story it would be if both could learn to play nice and work to the common goal of getting Woods back to the top of the golf world one last time.
That would be, you know, I once wished there was money in my backyard, okay? And the chances of him and Harmon getting back to the earth, I think, are about the same. So I don't know about that. But it's fun to talk about. That's why I said I wish, and I wish also that he would be back. And I would have to agree that a lot of Tiger Woods' best wishers would wish that he would reunite with Butch Harmon. But right now, it's all about the odds and who's going to be the next coach. What should he be doing? What should he be looking for? He says that he has no hurry in finding one, and he's not out looking out for somebody. Yeah, I think that his assistants are, but he should be already looking or having at least 5 names to talk about. But there have been a lot of names, of course. Butch Harmon is the favorite in everybody's mind. Hank Haney, I think he threw himself out when he wrote the book, so I will just scratch him out. There's also talk about Chuck Cook, David Ledbetter, Peter Costas, Pete Cowan, and even Claude Harmon III, Dutch son, who I think he's an outsider looking in. He has been there, done that, just like Butch, so don't discount him there. There's also talk about Todd Anderson. Fred, you are a teaching pro. What would you say that Tiger should do now? Should he reinvent his swing once again? I read about Paul Azinger saying, hey, he should be fixed in 10 minutes. I think he was just trying to make his pitch at being Tiger's coach there too. But 10 minutes, I don't think you're going to fix anything. He said that if in 10 minutes he doesn't see any improvement, he should fire that person. So that he doesn't need to do something big. He just needs to fix things and go back to basics. What's your thought on what should be Tiger doing? And if you would be his next coach, what would you do?
Well, here's the deal. First of all, he can't do anything right now anyhow because he's on the bench. So, you know, he needs to rest and get healthy. That's the very first thing. You know, just enjoy being with the kids. Enjoy being with, you know, around home and just take it easy at this point. No sense rushing back to anything. No sense worrying about it right now. He's got a couple months here that is perfect for this. You know, he's got September, October, you know, that before he even needs to start thinking about swinging a club. And if he starts in November, that still gives him a month to get ready for the his own world challenge. So that's the first thing. The second thing is he has been playing golf his whole life. He knows the positions he wants to get into. Joey LaCava should be able to be his eyes and tell him if he's in the right spot or not as he's making a swing. It doesn't take any genius to see that when he's striping it on the range, he's staying down through it. He's extending, you know, he's doing what he needs to do. When he gets on the golf course, he starts coming out of it big time. So, you know, it's a matter of gaining the confidence on the range and taking it to the course. So, with that being said, you know, you mentioned a name in that. I'll toss out a couple. Claude Harmon, you know, I'm sure he's a great teacher. You know, I've studied him quite a bit on the stuff he's been doing on the Golf Channel. And, you know, he's very knowledgeable. But Todd Anderson, same way. You know, I think you mentioned Chuck Cook, Pete Cowan, all the top guys. They do not have the personality to stand up to a Tiger Woods. There's only one guy. I'll take that back. There's two guys that I see that could coach him right now. One of those would be Butch. I don't know if Butch would want to take it on. He might. You know, he's 70 years old. He keeps saying he wants to slow down and take it easier. You know, that might be a good challenge for him to spend a couple years with Tiger, getting back and winning a couple majors. That would really right his, you know, he's got a pretty big ego. He, you know, he likes to be the top dog. So that would definitely send him out as one of the best teachers of all time. But the other name you mentioned there, Carlos, that has some merit to me, who I think an awful lot of, is Paul Azinger. Paul Azinger's been there, done that, okay? He's gone through cancer treatment. Doesn't need to take a lot of golf off anybody. He could pretty much put Tiger in his place. To him, Tiger Woods is still a kid. He was an established player when Woods came on the tour, and you know, he's not afraid of him. So and Paul Azinger is a sharp guy. He is a very sharp guy. Do you remember the Ryder Cup win at Valhalla? I think it's the last damn time the U.S. team won. He broke it down into very fine pieces of what he wanted to do and really had a plan going into that. And who was it? The girl that just won, Lexi Thompson, I believe, won it. No, I'm sorry. Jessica Korda. Azinger has been working with Jessica Korda on her putting, and she has improved tremendously, chipping, her short game, chipping and putting. And she credits Azinger with doing that for her. So, you know what? This might come out of left field, but if I were Tiger, I'd be talking a little bit to Paul Azinger. You know, I might be talking a little bit to Butch. You know, just – but he just needs someone to give him some confidence and just give him a couple key things that he can go out to the golf course and play. He doesn't have to be the Tiger Woods of 2000. He can be the Tiger Woods of 2015. He doesn't have to hit it 500 frickin' yards. He's got a great iron game. So if the other guys are hitting wedge, he could hit 9-iron. You know, it's okay. He's still a good putter. He's still a great chipper. So, you know, I've always been kind of short off the tee, so I always think that the long game is a little bit overrated. It would be wonderful to be able to bomb it out to 300 yards. But you know, when you only hit it shorter, you got to figure out ways to get it around. And Tiger can do that. He has the game to do it. He's worked on it all his life. So the short answer to your question, Carlos, is don't do anything right now. Just rest and get healthy. Number two, when you do go back out, just go on your own for a while. Just see how it goes. You know what you're supposed. He knows what he's supposed to be doing. And number three, I wouldn't mind talking to Paul Azinger, or you know, I don't know if I want to fight with Butch Harmon or not, but Azinger would be a good guy.
Man, I can't say anything now because my next note, I had it here as a surprise. I was going to talk good about Paul Azinger, and you just stole it from me.
Sorry, you set me up, man.
I set it up for me, not for you.
You teed it up. You teed it up for me, baby.
Next time I won't talk about somebody like that. Oh, man, don't do that to me. Now, talking seriously, I was going to talk about all these things. Because one thing I really, and you hit it right the nail on the head there, was I don't think, I'm just going to cite Paul Azinger, one thing that he said. He said that Tiger doesn't need to revamp or rework anything but his head and his thought process. I have always said that Tiger's problems are not with his stroke. I think they're all in his head. He wants to be that person that he was before, and physically he's not that person anymore. The first thing that he has to learn is that he's a 38-year-old and he's not that kid that he was, that winner that he had those physical attributes when he was 24. And it comes to mind in tennis, not in golf, but it comes to mind Andre Agassi, one of the best players of all times, that he went to become a very good player. You know, when he came back after he realized, hey, I'm not as I was young before, he partnered with Brad Gilbert, and who is a guy maybe equivalent to what Paul Azinger is here in golf. So he revamped his game according to his limitations and his physical abilities when he was over 30, and he became a winner, a major winner again. And that's something that Tiger first has to do. He has to realize his limitations and start thinking, hey, I don't need to do an overhauling again and just go back to basics. And maybe Paul Azinger, he's right in what he's saying. Really, in the end, great players, you know how to do it. He's one of the best players of all time, undoubtedly. He got there by his talent. He knows what he has to do. He just has to start believing again and going back to basics. And I do think that he should go back. He should go to Paul Azinger. I do not think he will go to Butch Harmon, or Butch Harmon will not take him. That's what I think. But Paul Azinger would be a very, very good choice if he goes for it. So any final thoughts on this before we move on to our next subject?
No, it's funny how when those rumors come out, you know, it takes a couple of weeks for them to kind of fester and find a come to a head. But when I was over to Akron watching Foley, he was working with Rose on the range. Tiger was there. They were working a little bit together. And then Tiger went out for a practice round, and Foley went chugging after. You know, he was really working hard. You know, Foley works hard. He believes in what he does and what he teaches. And quite honestly, Carlos, what he's teaching is very sound. I really like it a lot. And I've incorporated some of what I can see that he has done with Tiger, with Hunter Mahan, with Justin Rose, into some of the students that I work with. And it's good stuff, but for some reason it's just not connecting with Tiger when he's on the golf course. It's just not working. So it was time to move on.
And like Tiger says, I think this is the best time to do it. He's going to have some time before his next tournament, which is 3 months away. So this is the perfect time for him. Who knows? Maybe that's what he needs. And like you say, I have to agree. Whatever the success they were having on the range, it wasn't translating into wins there on the field. So let's see. We'll have our field day trying to see what he's going to do and who's going to be the one, the next coach and all that. So I know that we are not done in the next few weeks with this. So, hey, that wraps up our At the Practice Range with Tiger Woods playing with Sean Foley. Let's take a short break, Fred, and when we come back, we have an interview with Jason Mangold, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our EIG, very important guest of the week, and we have a recorded interview with Jason Mangold. He's the championship director for next year's PGA Championship to EGA of America. So, Fred, set us up with this interview.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Mr. Mangold a week or so ago, and he is the guy that's going to get everything ready for the PGA Championship next year up at Whistling Straits. So we had a really interesting conversation talking about the course, talking about the problems that some of the problems they encountered when they were there a few years ago with the Dustin Johnson debacle coming down the last hole. And he was kind of an interesting guy to talk to, and we'll try and get him again when we get closer to the tournament next year.
Okay, let's listen to that interview with Jason Mangold.
We are here today with Jason Mangold, who is the director of the 2015 PGA Championship. Jason, we're so glad to have you today. Here we are, we just wrapped up the PGA Championship at Valhalla, and we're talking to you looking ahead to 2015 already.
Yeah, that's right, Fred. Thanks so much for having me on, but we're officially on the clock, I guess you could say.
Now, you're the director of the 2015 PGA Championship. I know you talked to the people at Valhalla. You're looking at what they've done, and you had two PGA Championships and a U.S. Senior Open there at Whistling Straits in the past, so you guys kind of know what you're doing up there. Are you looking at any changes or anything for next year?
Good question. Yeah, Kohler is such a wonderful partner for the PGA of America and really the game of golf, and it would have been so easy for us just to hit the reset button this time around, but great commitment by Pete Dye, who's the golf course architect that designed the Straits course, by the Kohler company and then by the PGA as well, to continue positively evolving the experience, if you will. So there hasn't been any changes to the golf course itself. That will remain similar. Obviously, they've got one of the best golf courses in the world in the Straits course, so no need to tinker with that. But outside the ropes, it will look really remarkably different from a spectator standpoint, from a corporate hospitality standpoint this time around. So what we've done is taken a look from the time someone arrives in their vehicle, really throughout their entire day, and we've really made a huge commitment to change that experience. So the main entrance, for instance, is going to be much different than it was last time around. It really, from the time someone arrives to the time that they're at the clubhouse and at the action, it will be really streamlined. Then out on the golf course, We've brought all our corporate hospitality facilities closer to the action. We brought our Wanamaker Club and maybe the best location we've ever had it at any PGA Championship to the right of the ninth hole. And then we're still working. You know, we've got a year to go. We're still going to make some additional improvements kind of along those lines as well. So we're definitely continuing to look at it under that lens and how we can better the experience.
You mentioned Pete and Alice Dye have designed all the courses there for the American Club at Kohler. And I think when they played this in 2010, Martin Keimer, of course, won. He won a playoff over Bubba Watson. Dustin Johnson had that unfortunate incident with a bunker. Was it a bunker? Wasn't it a bunker? And I think there's like, 1,200 bunkers on the golf course or something like that. And the way the crowd was walking, it became difficult to distinguish what was a bunker and what wasn't. Has any of that been changed? Have you addressed that? How is that going to be dealt with for next year?
Yeah, it's something we'll continue. You know, Kerry Haig, who's our chief championships officer, he really is the one who will deal with the competition side. And he'll work closely with our rules committee and with the superintendent's team here at Whistling Straits. But any indication is that it'll play very similarly from that standpoint to how it did in 2010. And obviously that was an unfortunate circumstance. You know, the players were made aware throughout the week on multiple occasions, as were the caddies of that ruling. Understandable, certainly in that circumstance, how that happened. But I think Dustin handled it well at the time. And obviously we got a worthy champion in Martin Keimer.
I have been lucky to be in that area a couple times over the last few years, and it is absolutely beautiful up there. The eastern shore, the western shore of Lake Michigan is gorgeous, fantastic views. Sitting on the veranda of the clubhouse, which is a beautiful stone structure, and sitting on the veranda having lunch and looking out across there and watching people play and looking out of the lake, it's truly stunning, and I would recommend that anybody take the time to swing in there and take a look at that. And then the Black Wolf Run property is also outstanding. And the American Club as a whole is a really good value for people that want to come to, you know, to Wisconsin for a golf getaway.
It definitely is. And the Kohler Company does such a great job of managing those properties that you mentioned and managing the golf aspect of it. It really is second to none. From the second someone arrives at the American Club or the Inn at Woodlake, and throughout their experience here, the Kohler Company really does a wonderful job, and I certainly would recommend it to anybody who's looking to take a golf trip.
Now, I understand there's a lot of events and activities that will be happening over the year leading up to the tournament next year. One of the things that you're looking for right now are volunteers. And if somebody wanted to volunteer, get involved in the 2015 PGA Championship, if they happened to venture down to Valhalla and saw all the volunteers there and thought, boy, that might be a fun way to spend a week's vacation, how would they go about that? What do you do and what are you looking for in volunteers?
Great question. So we launched to the general public earlier this summer, and we're already about 90% full in terms of we need about 3,500 volunteers to run the championship. So the way I can kind of sum up the volunteer program is, you know, there is a fee. You get a uniform. You get food and beverage vouchers. You get a pass for the week. And the fee is also it's about $90 to $100 less than our week-long grounds pass. So you not only get to attend the championship all week long, even outside of the 3 to 4 shifts that you'll be asked to work, but you're getting an amazing experience. If you're a golf enthusiast, you know, really being able to take part in the operation of a major championship is an experience unlike any other. And I think we've seen over the years, you know, going back to the 98 Women's Open, which is the first event here at Destination Kohler, that we've had volunteers who have participated in every single event over the years. And we continue to hear what a wonderful experience it is, and the fact that so many people are coming back and doing it again in 2015 is just a testimony to that. And then there's a neat tie. You know, we look ahead to 2020, and we've got the Ryder Cup here. And so for those volunteers that complete their 3 to 4 required shifts in 2015, they'll be first in line for positions at the Ryder Cup. And the Ryder Cup's never been held at the same location twice in the United States. So it's definitely a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, and it'd be worth it just to spend a week in Kohler and around Whistling Straits. It's fantastic. Now, I also understand that Milwaukee's kind of getting involved in the action there a little bit. They're a little bit down the road, but there's a innovations in golf exhibit at the Discovery World show there that's going to be playing for a few months.
There is. So it's not just a not just a Kohler event. This is really an all of Wisconsin event. And as you mentioned, the exhibit that we're partnering with Discovery World on actually runs into next spring. And so Discovery World, for those people that may be listening that don't know, is a wonderful facility in downtown, right in the heart of downtown Milwaukee, that focuses on innovation and technology and science, and kind of where the golf exhibit comes into it is our exhibit is made up of a certain artifact. We'll say it could be equipment, it could be apparel, it could be a personal artifact of each of our champions going back to our first PGA champion, Jim Barnes, back in 1916. And to look at the exhibit kind of through Discovery World's lens is really neat. So you think about the evolution of equipment from back in the 1916 PGA all the way through our most current champion, Jason Duffner, and obviously the evolution of equipment, the evolution of apparel. You look at Payne Stewart, wearing a corduroy hat when he won, and obviously now the guys have moisture-wicking apparel, and it really is fascinating to look at the history of the championship with that lens.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of change. Hickory shafts to the wood heads, persimmon wood heads, to now metal heads, graphite, composite shafts. It's unbelievable. And then that's I'm talking about all the ball changes and things that have happened over the years.
That's right. Yeah, that's a whole other component.
Yeah, exactly. And I know in Kohler, Mr. Kohler is looking at building another property, getting Pete Dye again involved. And the only news that we've had of that is he's looking for permits and trying to get that done. And maybe been a little bit of resistance there from the town of Wilson, we don't know any more to talk about that at this point, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's certainly been more a Kohler project than a PGA of America project. But I can say as a golfer, as an avid golfer, that having played the other courses that they have here at Destination Kohler, that I'll be first in line, should that project come to fruition. It'll be fantastic.
Jason, is there anything else that we need to talk about for the PGA Championship next year that you'd like to let our listeners in on?
Yeah, I think even though we're still just under a year away from the championship, that now's the time for people to get involved. So PGAChampionship.com has all the information, whether it's tickets or volunteer opportunities or corporate hospitality, it's all there. But we're looking forward to bringing a major championship back here to Wisconsin and the great golf fans in the state and across the Midwest.
Well, Jason, thanks again for taking a few minutes and talking to us, and we wish you a lot of success. I know the year's going to fly by really fast for you, and before you know it, you'll be teeing it up on the 2015 PGA Championship.
That's right. It'll be right around the corner, and Fred, thanks so much for having me on today.
That was Jason Mingle, the PGA director for the PGA Championship next year at Whistling Straits. So, Fred, hey, that's, like he said, Kohler, Wisconsin, that's a small city. And back in 2004 and 2010, Whistling Straits is already one of the top-rated courses in the nation and is bringing back major championship golf back to Wisconsin. They had huge crowds back then. He mentioned about the volunteers. They need a lot of them. I mean, volunteers definitely it's a key thing there for any tournament to be run perfectly. So definitely a great big issue now for Kohler. Great thing for that small city to host again a major championship.
Yeah, Carlos, that Whistling Straits property is just really like a little piece of heaven. I mentioned there in the piece about sitting on the veranda and having lunch and looking out. You can see the 18th green and the 9th green players coming in kind of below you, and you can see players going out on the first tee. And then you look out across to Lake Michigan. It's really gorgeous. Recommended highly to anybody if they get out that way, just to stop in and and check out the clubhouse and maybe have lunch or something. But we started looking, my wife started looking at booking a room up there or a bed and breakfast or something for the tournament next year. We thought we'd go out for a couple of days, and everything's pretty much already booked up for next year. Jason did say when I was talking to him that the press hotel would be in Milwaukee. There will be buses running back and forth. It's about a 45-minute drive each way. So it's going to be tough if you haven't already gotten rooms there to stay in Kohler, even with the American Club and the three or four properties they have with rooms. I think there were just a handful of places available, and they were very, very expensive. So it's a big deal for that area. It is a beautiful area all the way from Milwaukee up to Green Bay, along Lake Michigan, and would recommend it highly to anybody that gets a chance to go up there. And maybe if you want to be a volunteer and rub elbows with the pros for a week, this would be a great time to do it.
And definitely one thing that this is doing is, that, like I mentioned, is bringing back major championship and big competitions back to Wisconsin. And come to think about it, in about a 16-year period, they would have had three PGA championships and the Ryder Cup there. So that's pretty unprecedented because the 2020 Ryder Cup is going to be there at Whistling Straits. So big news there for that part of Wisconsin. Kohler, Wisconsin, Whistling Straits, the straight course there next year will be the host of the PGA championship. Fred, we have one more break before we come back and we start our previews for this weekend's action. So everybody hold on. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time to start our previews for this weekend's action. We're going to start with the big tournament, the FedEx Cup playoffs, still going strong. This week, the PGA Tour is in Massachusetts for this week for the Deutsche Bank Championship, which gets underway on Friday, taking the best chance that there's going to be Labor Day on Monday, so it's going to end on Labor Day. Last year, as we all remember, Henrik Stenson, he was coming off that hot stretch in last summer which he took second place at the Open Championship, shared second at the WGC Bridgestone Invitational, and finished third at the PGA Championship. And as hot as that run was, it was just a foreshadowing of what was to come. He fired four rounds in the 60s at the TPC Boston to beat Steve Stricker by two strokes and win. And if that wasn't enough, he went on to win the Tour Championship and the DP World Tour Championship in July, which was the season finale in the European Tour. He won both the FedEx Cup and the European Tour's Race to Dubai. We all remember that was a great lucrative year for Stenson. The field this year was scaled back to 100, to the top 100, after the first, the Barclays, was over, so the FedEx Cup standings after last week's tournament. However, only 94 players are scheduled to play, with Justin Rose, Sergio Garcia, G-Mac, and Paul Casey among those that will be skipping the event. Rose is taking the time off because of family reasons. Garcia, he had said all over that he wasn't going to play all four events of the FedEx Cup playoffs. He doesn't do it also on the Race to Dubai finals. G-Mac's wife gave birth to their first child on Monday, so he's busy with it. Paul Casey's fiancé is due to give birth next Monday, so that's why they're not going to be playing this weekend. As we all remember, Hunter Mahan is coming off that hot victory at the Barclays, and he's a very streaky player. When he gets on, he can really ride that streak very, very hot, so we have to watch for him. And all the top players, Rory McIlroy, who didn't have his best, he's human, he proved he is human, he didn't win, his fourth in a row. But hey, we know something about Rory McIlroy is that if he gets down, he gets back up quickly. So that's one of the players to watch for this week. And of course, Ricky Fowler as well, who we all know how great he's been playing. Tim Furyk, always a bridesmaid lately for the past few years, but he's always there. So, Fred, how about the Deutsche Bank Championship?
Yeah, this is the big time of the year, Carlos. $8 million purse, 1.44 to the winner, 72 holes, playing at TPC Boston. They're going next week for the BMW out to clear out to Denver, but up on the East Coast this week. You've got, as you mentioned, there's 100 in the field. However, only 94 teeing it up. You got Dustin Johnson, who's out, Jason Duffner, who's injured. Sergio's taking a week off. I don't think he's got anybody pregnant, but he's not playing this week. Paul Casey and GMAC, as you mentioned, have some personal issues at home with growing their families. And Justin Rose decided he wanted to take a little time off, looking ahead to the last couple tournaments and moving into the Ryder Cup. So short field this week. You've got, as we mentioned earlier, Hunter Mahan has moved to number one in the FedEx Cup rankings, but Rory is right there. Jimmy Walker has been hanging in there all year. And I was going to say this till later, but I'm going to give it to you right now, Carlos. You want to mark this down. This is an important thing here. I'm going to give you a name. We're only 1 week in, and I'm going to give you a name for the $10 million FedEx Cup champion here. If it's not Rory, it's Matt Kuchar. He has 11 top tens this year. Of course, he won at Hilton Head. He had the runner-up. He lost in a playoff at the Shell Houston Open. And in 2010, he was a runner-up in the FedEx Cup playoffs. And he's number four right now. So he's in position, if he can just have a couple decent weeks here, at the Deutsche Bank and then at Denver in the BMW, he can be set up. And, you know, I believe he went to Georgia Tech to college. And I believe Georgia Tech is in the Atlanta area, as I believe. And that's where Eastlake is. And that's where they play the Tour Championship. So I like Matt Kuchar to wrap this whole thing up. We'll see how that plays out. I'll bet you'll be in the top five if he doesn't win. Guys on the various bubbles, Gary Woodland is number 30, Scott Brown number 70, and Jeff Ogilvy number 100. Those are the important numbers going forward because this week they're cutting from 100 down to 70, and then for the finals it'll be only 30. Top five is where you want to be because those are the guys that with a win, you're guaranteed winning the 10 mil. It's curious. You know, it's really curious. I guess Sergio has done this before. I think he's taken time off in the FedEx Cup playoffs before. But he's had such a great year. He hasn't won a major, but, you know, winning the FedEx Cup would be a real feather in that guy's cap. So, he probably looks at it long term, and it's just another deal for him. But, taking a week off for Sergio, I would think that would be a big deal. But, oh, well, maybe not.
I don't know, but he does it often because last year he did it, and he did it also on the Race to Dubai. So that's why I mentioned he does this for some reason, something like this final ending season of the season is like not that important to him, I guess. He just takes 1 week every time. So right now he's number 15, so he should be. He's still a long way to go, but of course there's two more tournaments after this. He's going to be assured that he's going to be on that top 20. But two players that really come to my mind and that you could not even think at the beginning of the year, maybe that they were going to be in that position. Ian Poulter at 91, you mentioned it before, and Luke Donald also, who's I think he was 80-something, 80, 81. So those two players need a big week this week to keep their hopes alive to stay in the top 70. So that's something very to look forward to. But on the players, I think that definitely Hunter Mahan should keep himself very hot. He's a streaky player. I always say that he's a guy that goes through streaks. Once you see him, once you don't, he goes like 3-4 tournaments, 5 tournaments, and he's always there on the top. And he always, like you mentioned also, he's very consistent on the big tournaments, especially here in the FedEx Cup, which he hasn't missed. Rory McIlroy, I look forward to him jumping back and having a great week. We've seen this in the past when he just takes a week off and then comes back winning, and he's definitely the hottest player on the planet. Matt Kuchar in the top 5, he's number 4, Mr. Consistency. And Jason Day, he's getting creeping back up, and hey, he's playing well again. He's getting back to his top shape. Don't discount him. He's now number 7, so he comes from a tie second. And how about, and I have to ask you about this, Cameron Tringali, number 10. He had it all planned. That's why he disqualified himself there for the PGA Championship, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, good for, he just had a great week. You know, with doing what he did and then coming out the other side of it, pretty good deal. Pretty strong.
Yeah. No, but it's great to see him there, and he's in the top 10 right now, and who knows, hey, we remember what Camilo Villegas did some years ago, so, hey, he might be the Camilo Villegas this year. Anything can happen in the FedEx Cup. That's the beauty of it. Nobody's out until the final tournament. Hey, let's move on now and let's talk a little bit about some other type of FedEx Cup playoffs that are going to be starting. It's not the FedEx Cup, but it's in the WAF.com Tour. And season is over for them, so they're going to be starting their last four tournaments, which is going to be their kind of a playoffs for them. They're going to be traveling to Fort Wayne, Indiana. You told me you're going to be there this weekend for the Hotel Fitness Championship and the first event of the WAF.com Tour Finals. The field consists of the top 75 players on the 2014 WAF.com Tour money list and players who finished 126 to 200 on the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup points list. So this is the first of four full field stroke play events to compete for 50 PGA Tour cards for next year's season. The top 25 players on the web.com tour money list already secured their PGA Tour cards for next season. Those players are now playing for their priority ranking. While the remaining players are competing for the remaining 25 cards, the event is being held at Sycamore Hills Golf Club in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and that course was designed by golf legend Jack Nicklaus and opened for play in 1989. Trevor Immelman last year won, and he's going to be back to defend, and automatic earned promotion winner already of the top on the web.com tour, Carlos Ortiz. He's going to be playing also. So how about this start of the web.com tour finals, Fred?
Yes, and I did confirm, Carlos, I looked it up, Ortiz is in the field. Matter of fact, he has a 7:30 start time in the morning in the Pro-Am out there. So it's kind of surprising he's already earned his PGA Tour card, but he's teeing her up again this week. So the big story there at Sycamore Hills this week is wet conditions. They got over 5 inches of rain Saturday and Sunday there. They closed the golf course to the public on Monday and Tuesday, allowed only players in there and media if you called ahead and made and told them you were coming so they could let you in. But they weren't letting anybody in today except players for some practice, some limited practice. Tomorrow they are going on with the Pro-Am events. As I mentioned, I'm gonna drive down there tomorrow and talk to Bill Calfee, the president of the web.com tour, and we'll have his interview probably next week on the show. Also going to try and get a couple words with Carlos Ortiz for you, Carlos. I know you followed him all year. You've been a loyal fan, and you called his 3-win season earlier in the year, and he finally pulled it off for you. So
make sure he knows that Make sure he knows
that. I will. I'm definitely going to tell him that. Exactly. Also, Jason Gore is there in the top names. So kind of looking forward to it, and I will report with all the details to you next week.
That's about the start of the Web.com Tour Finals, the four-event final there for them. Let's talk now a little bit about the European Tour schedule that features the Italian Open that takes center stage this week. Why is it important? It's not only because this tournament dates back to 1925. Some of the European Tour's best are in the United States competing in the PGA Tour playoffs. However, three of the top 50 players are in the world are in the field. Those are Stephen Gallagher, number 34, Italian Francesco Molinari, 44, and Juuse Luyten, number 50. Hey, important. Stephen Gallagher is there, Juuse Luyten there, and what are they trying to do? They're trying to be on the Ryder Cup. So that's very important for them. And this schedule on the European Tour, the Italian Open, Molinari became the first Italian to win a World Golf Championships event when he won the HSBC Championships in Shanghai, China in 2010. So Italian Matteo Manassero will be the home favorite there. He made his professional debut in 2010 in this tournament. So how about this tournament, the Italian Open, especially with the importance of it, Stephen Gallagher and Juuse Luyten fighting to try to get into the Ryder Cup?
I don't really know. I don't have a lot for you on the Italian Open. The big story this week will be those guys trying to get onto Paul McGinley's Ryder Cup team, as you mentioned. The golf course is Circolo Golf Torino. So I think they're in Turin, Italy. I think that's where they're at. You've got a pretty good golf course. It was opened in 1956. John Morrison was the course designer, and it was redone by Graham Cook and Mario Croce. They say that you need to be accurate from the tee there, but that's pretty much the case with any golf course. And it is a parkland golf course with not a lot of water, but a little bit of water on the course. So don't have a lot for you on this tournament except for the fact, Carlos, that going to be watching to see if one of these guys can play their way onto the Ryder Cup team.
And definitely that's the headline for this tournament. So it's going to be played there at the Circolo Golf Torino in La Mandaria. In Fiano, Torino, Italy, so be there. That's where they're going to be playing the Italian Open. Hey,
If you say so. Easier for you to say than me.
You trust me in what I'm saying, right?
I trust
you. It sounded good. It's okay. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the LPGA Tour that travels to Oregon this week for the Portland Classic at Columbia Edgewater Country Club. This tournament was previously known as the Safeway Classic. Two of the top five players in the world are in the field, defending champions to Sam Pedersen, number four, and Soyeon Ryu, who comes from a great win. She's number five. Pedersen is still looking for her first victory of the year after a four-win season last year. She has five straight top seven finishes, while Ryu is coming off that victory last week at the Canadian Pacific Women's Open. She has seven top 10 finishes in her last 10 events. So how about a little bit of this Portland Classic at Columbia Edgewater Country Club for the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, this is the 43rd year. It's the for a tournament in Portland. It's the longest running non-major event on the LPGA Tour. There is a $1.3 million purse. It's a 72-hole event. Suzanne Pedersen is the defending champion, and she seems to always play well at the end of the year. And this is her time. As you mentioned, Soyeon Ryu is coming in off a win. MB Park has been playing very well, and it's curious to see if Stacey Lewis will get back to her top 10 ways. And something that I had failed to mention, and I'm going to correct that right now, someone that we have been watching now for 2 years, Charlie Hall is in the field in Portland this week. So she has a total of 193,000 in six events as a professional and has positioned herself well to have a chance at finishing the equivalent of the top 40 on the LPGA money list. So she you could see her as a full-time member next year on the LPGA Tour. I guess that's about all I have for the LPGA Tour with the Portland Classic.
One more main tournament to preview, and that's on the Champions Tour that travels to Canada this week for the Shaw Charity Classic in Calgary, Alberta. Seven of the top 10 players on the money list are in the field, including money leader Bernhard Langer, who, oh my God, he didn't win last week. Langer, he leads Colin Montgomery by more than $800,000 for that top spot. He can increase his lead this week as Montgomery is not teeing it up. Langer has five victories this season, and he's the only player with more than two wins. He finished tied for 15 last week at the Boyne Classic, which broke a string of five straight top 10 finishes. So this is going to be the 18th official Champions Tour event to be stationed in Canada, and fourth in Calgary. Two Canadian golfers are in the field, Jim Rutledge and Rod Spittle. So how about this tournament, the Shaw Charity Classic in Calgary, Alberta, for the Champions Tour?
Yeah, they're playing at the Canyon Meadows Golf and Country Club, opened in 1957. There's going to be 81 men in the field. It's three rounds, 54 holes, no cut. Pretty good purse, 2.25 mil with 337.5 going to the winner. So one of the bigger purses on the Champions Tour. You've got you're going to have some Golf Channel is going to televise all three rounds on a tape delayed basis from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, while the final round on Sunday will be live from 7 to 9. This, you know, let's see, what else about the Champions Tour stop in Western Canada showcases Calgary. You know, maybe they'll have a rodeo. Maybe they'll start a rodeo out across the street or something while we're there. But yeah, it's they're up in Canada. They're winding down the Champions Tour season. I think they got about six more events left, and everything's winding down on all the tours. The PGA Tour is getting real close to the end.
Everything is getting close to the end now this time of the year. The other tournaments that are going to be this weekend, on the men's, the Japan Golf Tour has the KBC Augusta. It's going to be played at the Kia Golf Club in Fukuoka, Japan. The PGA Tour of Australasia has the Queensland Open. It's going to be played at the Brookwater Golf and Country Club in Brisbane, Australia. The PGA Tour Canada has the Wildfire Invitational, played at the Wildfire Golf Club in Peterborough in Ontario. The Sunshine Tour is going to have the Wild Waves Golf Challenge. That's going to be played at the Wild Coast Sun Country Club that's in Port Edward in South Africa. The European Senior Tour has the Travis Perkins Masters that's going to be played at Woburn Golf Club. Duke's Course, they're in Woburn, England. You mentioned it a little bit earlier on, Brett. The European Challenge Tour has the Northern Ireland Open Challenge. It's going to be played at the Calgorm Castle in Ballymena, Northern Ireland, and the Challenge Tour is also getting to the nitty-gritty there also as well. The eGolf Professional Tour has the River Hills Championship played at the River Hills Country Club in Lake Wylie in South Carolina, while the women have two more tournaments. One of them is in the Ladies European Tour. That's the Ladies Scotland Open. It's going to be played from the Arkerfield Links in East Lothian in Scotland, while the Japan LPGA Tour has the Nitori Ladies played from the Iwa Country Club in Hokkaido in Japan. So, Fred, if you want to say anything about any of those tournaments or any other tournament before we move on to other news or news bits, feel free to do it.
I don't have any more on tournaments, Carlos. I do... take a minute here since we've got a little bit of time tonight. Last Tuesday I came to you. I was actually in Glade Springs Resort in Beckley, West Virginia. It's a beautiful golf resort with three 18-hole golf courses, wonderful accommodations there. And that was just part of a swing through West Virginia on a media junket, And that was our third stop. We had played the Pete Dye course in northern West Virginia, and it was a real treat. I'm not a Pete Dye fan. I think he makes his courses way too difficult for the average golfer most of the time, but he got it right with the Pete Dye golf club there. It's a beautiful place, and I really enjoyed playing the golf course. Hope to get back there someday. Then we were at the Stonewall Resort. They have a Palmer course there that we played the next day. Very difficult track. If you like your golf, you know, with tight off the tees and difficult greens, Mr. Palmer made a tough golf course there. It ate my lunch for sure. Then after we left Glade Springs, we got to play a couple days at the Greenbrier. And, Carlos, that was a real treat. I hope to have some people on the show in the coming month or so from the Greenbrier to talk more about that facility. They have announced some big changes to that facility, some things that they're doing. Since James Justice bought that property 5 years ago, he has injected a bunch of money, and just the employees there are filled with an enthusiasm. It's a wonderful thing. It's a really a first-class facility. I recommend it highly to anybody that's wants to go to a top-shelf resort, not only for golf, but for anything that you can possibly think of. The food is just outstanding. I was really looking forward to getting there, and you know how when you're looking forward to going someplace that the experience doesn't live up to your expectation? Well, my expectations were all exceeded by the staff and by the facilities at the Greenbrier. It is truly a wonderful, wonderful place. And then we got to spend our last day at Pipestem State Park, which has a nice, a beautiful little 18-hole golf course, really nice. A lot of fun to play. We got rained out there, didn't get to play the whole thing. But after 6 days of golf, everybody was ready to get on the bus and kind of head home anyhow. So, I'll be talking some more about West Virginia golf in the in coming episodes. And also we'll have some people on from the Greenbrier, hopefully, to tell us more about that. But, Carlos, I have to tell you, going to the Greenbrier is kind of like going to heaven, man.
So you had an epiphany there when you saw it.
You even
had your own locker.
We did. They put our name on our locker. It was. I got the nameplate too, Carlos. I brought it home with me.
You see, you brag about those things, and I saw the picture, and it was awesome, awesome, awesome. Hey, I have to ask you about this. I saw a tweet this morning from Morning Drive that said that Tom Watson wants to reduce the number of captain's picks. I know we've talked a lot about the Ryder Cup, but I have to ask you this. He says that the number of captain picks should be zero. That's how it was when he first qualified for the Ryder Cup in 93. And, hey, what you think about that? Should there be no captain's picks for the Ryder Cup?
Well, you know, I Paul Azinger, who I think an awful lot of, you know, thought there should be four. And he lobbied for four, and he got four. And he got the best out of those. But I tend to agree with Mr. Watson. You know, play your way in. It's just like playing your way into a major championship, or playing your way onto the PGA Tour, or you know, playing your way into the WGC event. Earn it. Why should the captains be allowed to pick somebody? Why make it a pageant? You know, who's got we're going to have the bikini contest or what? Just play your way on. So, yeah, I tend to agree with him. I think I would like it better that way, actually.
That would take out the controversy part as well. I mean, you earn it.
What would we talk about?
No way.
What would we talk about?
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the captains pick then.
You're running us
we
out of business, Carlos.
Criticizing anybody then. We wouldn't have anything to criticize. No. But really, yeah, it would be great because that way you really go for it and you would see players really trying to go for that and be one of those top 12 players. But at the same time, I can understand that there might be some players that got injured as well and might be trying to get back into playing, or been playing well. Good players, let's say, like Tiger Woods, he might have been well, he might have been healthy. He would have been a captain's pick if he would have been healthy, but he wasn't. So in those cases, you know, he would have been out by not earning his way there. So that's like a double whammy, right? Good if you do, good if you don't, if you don't. So anyway, we'll see what happens there. And,
well, the reality, Carlos, is that the picks are exactly for that reason. The PGA makes a lot of money on the Ryder Cup, a lot of money, okay? And they make more money when Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson play on the Ryder Cup team because more people watch. So if you get a year like this year, when Tiger didn't have that great a year and he wasn't even in contention, you can pick him so that you help out your television programmer. And that's the whole reason for those picks, to get those big names in there. They can, you know, the captain say, oh, well, we want a guy that's putting good and with heart, and, that's all well and good, but the old saying, money talks and the other stuff walks. Well, that's the other stuff. And the money part of the deal is that the big names puts butts in front of the TV. So that's what it's all about. Those people that pay the big bucks for those ads on the television demand some TV time. So that's why you got to have some picks probably.
Definitely. I have to agree with that. Hey, we have 3 more minutes to go, but let me get one more thing out and talk to you about it. And first, I read this at Ryan Ballinger's Golf News Network, and that he was reporting about GMAC. He's parting ways with Horizon Sports Management. You know, remember, Rory left Horizon Sports Management, and on Sunday, the man who recruited him to that representation firm ended his dead relationship, and that was GMAC. He announced on Sunday that he will be parting ways with Horizon and founder Conor Rich at the end of this season after a 7-year partnership. So like McIlroy, GMAC will now represent himself. So it's kind of, I don't know, would it be just coincidence that this is happening for?
Oh, I'm sure. I don't really have any story or any insight on that. They didn't call me and ask me about it, but those kind of things happen all the time. You know, guys change and move around and swap around different agents. And agents do some things for one guy and they don't do it, something else for another guy. And so, that stuff, it's kind of like having caddies, the caddies come and the caddies go. I don't think GMAC is happy how this whole thing with Rory went down. Rory, at the end of the day, Darren Clark, Graham McDowell and Rory McIlroy have history. They're pretty good friends. And Rory and GMAC were very good friends. I mean, they were kind of like brothers. And I don't think they are right now. I think that kind of hurts just from what I see from the outside kind of looking in. So, maybe they'll kiss and make up one of these days and everything will be hunky-dory again. So, maybe him getting away from Horizon will be kind of a start of that.
At the end of the day, you'll see maybe they'll form a firm between the three of them to represent everybody, especially for
they've got one. They got a guy that they can trust, Chubby Chandler. He's
mm-hmm.
the best guy in the world. They all love him. Darren Clark, he's been great for Darren Clark for all these years. He's great when these guys are young. He brings them all in. Chubby takes them all when they're young. And then they make a few bucks, and then they go on to somebody else. It's kind of like, you know, being with Butch Harmon and making your career, and then you move to somebody else.
Yep. Hey, Fred, that wraps up our show. We only have 25 more seconds. So thank you for another week here at the Backline Report. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Black Talk Radio. And now, officially, you can follow us and tune in. So look for us there in the app. If you haven't done so, follow us on Twitter. Our ID is Backline Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred L. Fader. Be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.